This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
This is Brightside Home Theater.
Let's get this show on the road, John.
Okay.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. The weather changes every 5 minutes here. We've had spring, summer, fall, winter, downpours at track meets, snow, everything. But I'm doing okay. Thanks for asking.
Yeah. And you're supposed to be more stable than we are up here in New England. So what's going on down there?
It was like 33 degrees and stuff recently. It'll be 70 the next day. It's crazy.
Do you guys do okay with 33 degrees in West Virginia, right?
Oh, yeah. 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 I mean, it gets colder than that, heck.
Yeah, yeah.
Question about that.
Yeah, it's not like my buddy in Texas that's like, he's in Houston, and it's like, when it gets down into the 40s, they're like, winter coats!
Oh, I know. My sister lives in Boca Raton. It's the same thing. They don't even own winter coats, and they'll come home for Christmas and just not be able to handle them well.
Oh, so how it's we? You are one of my longtime listeners, and I asked you before we hit record. I'm like, are we gonna let everybody in on this? And it's like, so when I get your emails, I just say John M maybe, but then I also, and this is how long time listener you are. You let me know, and I just kept the secret. You're also WV Brew on Twitter. Yeah.
There was really no reason for that. I just didn't put my name. I just thought that was cool because I went to WVU. You know, it was my undergraduate school, and it's like our professional sports team in West Virginia, so. And I sell beer. That's what I do for a living. I'm an Anheuser-Busch distributor and Coors distributor and Yuengling and a bunch of other ones. But it's fun.
That's
fun business.
Yeah. And it's funny. It's all coming together here because I got the WV, but I never put together the brew because I didn't know that's what you did. But way back when I was first starting, this is like 2 years ago when I'm first starting out and I'm talking about what listeners are saying. And it's like, I'd get an email from you, but then I also got your tweets and I was commenting like you were two different people because I didn't have a ton of comments and listeners coming in and you were commenting. You're like super active. I appreciate it. Cause you are what, honestly, it's people like yourself that drive other people to come in. You know, because they're like, oh, he's going to comment to him. And then you've driven this podcast a lot with all of your comments and stuff.
What this podcast has done for me and has probably done for a lot of people, it's given us a place to open dialogue about this stuff. Because frankly, none of my friends could care less. My wife could care less. My parents could care less. It's I have nobody to talk to about this stuff. So, you know, whether it's a tweet or an email or whatever, it's a response and a discussion. And I enjoy listening to all your guests on your podcast.
Thank you. I'm glad I was able to figure this part out, to be able to get people to come on. And it's fun. Sunday mornings and it's really turned into something that I never expected, but I'm glad everybody's enjoying it. I thoroughly enjoy it because, like you, that's why I started doing this, is because I had nobody to talk to. So I was like, I'll just talk to myself in my little closet downstairs and hopefully people will listen. And luckily people did. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
I mean, really, there's nobody that I'm friends with that could care less, like that the Godfather came out on 4K.
Yeah.
You know, stuff. They won't even care. They like the movie, but they don't care.
Right. Yeah, and I've got some friends that pretend that they know, and they're like, oh, that's nice, but they just don't have the same passion. But most people, like you said, it's like their eyes roll back in their head. And I've said it before, and like when I break down a movie, I'm basically doing what I did to my poor dad growing up. I'd watch a movie and then I'd come running upstairs and tell him about it. And this was on a little TV, no surround, just I saw a movie and on UHF channel on a Saturday afternoon and be like, Dad, this is what happened. And he'd be like, oh, no. And I break down every scene and all the whole thing and be like, this was great and blah, blah, blah. And now I'm like, people are listening. So he's amazed.
Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Everybody gets into home theater because they like movies first, because there was no home theater really, unless right. you're exceptionally wealthy back in the day. So how did you start really getting a love for movies?
Well, like I said, Star Wars was the first one. My dad took me to see that. And honestly, that part there was okay. Hey, I was one of four kids. Both my parents worked. I didn't get a lot of time with either of my parents alone time. You know what I mean? Like special to do something. So the few things that we got to do, and Star Wars was one of them. And the other one was, when I was 15, he took me to see, Rambo First Blood Part 2 on a school night. It was my first rated R movie. And it's one of those things that as a parent, I don't think he understood what he was doing at the time, but it's like, it was that, hey, that's something special that I'll never forget. And then add in, I kind of have a, mechanical engineering type mind. Like I loved reading mechanical engineering. I love how things worked. Wasn't smart enough to actually implement it. But I was really interested in that stuff. So then the marriage of watching Star Wars on HBO every day that you could when you were a kid in the 80s, and then saying, how can I get that to be like what it was at the theater? And then, of course, probably reading Popular Mechanics, reading some magazines, and then you start seeing stuff in home theater. It's like, hey, I could try and do this. And I had a fascination with stereos and stuff, with car stereos, mm-hmm. and how do I get that kind of stuff into my bedroom in my parents' house? And then it kind of just blossomed from there. And when I was 18, we graduated high school. My buddy John went to work at Radio Shack, and we would look at messing around with receivers. And then I think that's kind of when home theater receivers started to come out. And it was right in the late 80s where we really started to get into the Dolby Surround. And it just piqued my interest. And it was like, I had already set up a system in my room that was just, talk about a Frankenstein system. It wasn't even breaking it out into channels. I was just throwing sound wherever I could, right? Like you take a stereo sound, split off of that, and you'd have four channels and be like, yeah. And it wasn't anything. It wasn't home theater. Nothing was placed correctly in the room, but that's what I did. And it was that, you know, and then off and running, the technology took off and I took off with it.
Well, I'll tell you my story. It's a little bit more, I guess my love for movies started probably in fourth or fifth grade. I mean, my parents, my mom especially, took me to some movies when I was younger. She took me to see Star Wars. I'm be 50 this year, so you can get an idea how long ago that was my age. And she took me to see the Pink Panther, and it was horrible. I mean, I didn't understand. I was 7 years old. I'm watching this. It's dark. It's boring. There's so much dialogue. And I was like, screw this.
Isn't that a lot of sarcasm and stuff? Like, it's all supposed to be. It's all over your head at 7 years old.
And it's all accents and stuff like that. I mean, I'm just a kid. I didn't understand any of it. I hated it. I thought it was awful. So after that, I really didn't care much because I didn't really understand at the time, you know, being, I don't know, 5, 6, 7. And we didn't have a cinema in town. So the drive-in was where we went. A boy moved to town about maybe third or fourth grade. He was a friend of mine, and his father was Korean and his mother was German. And this kid was brilliant. I mean, brilliant. He works for the Fed now. I haven't kept in touch with him, but he like was brilliant, and he would read novels and things of this nature when we were like in fourth and fifth grade, just a brilliant guy. And he was always into movies, and would get like the Starlog magazines and things like that mm-hmm. that would show you what's coming up. And so when I became good friends with him, I got into that. And then we had a drive-in in town. We weren't old enough to drive. We were like in fourth or fifth grade. And during the summers, we would sit outside on the bench and watch like Indiana Jones, watch Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, all that stuff. And it was so much fun. I mean, you couldn't ask for, it's not the best audio. It's not, it's pretty good video. It's a huge screen.
Yeah.
At a drive-in. And I saw all those movies when I was younger, a lot of them. Conan, I mean, stuff like, you know, just cool stuff. I wanted to even be able to get into the theater at the cinema. But that's how I really started liking movies. And after that, it was just, you know, every birthday, every this, every that. I drugged my poor sister to go see Tron for like my 10th birthday in 1982. in some cinema, it wasn't even shown that many places. And she's like, this is terrible. I never want to go to one of your things, birthdays again. But it's been so much fun. And then after that, when I was a little older, I was still in the movies, but then I got a car and I started wanting car stereo stuff. So I'd get a car. You know, the first car I had, I wrecked, so it was done. But the next car I had that I got that was a nice car, it was like a Honda Prelude. It was the second car I got. It was sweet. I loved that car. But I would immediately take the head unit out, take out the door speakers, this and that, put all this stuff in. I didn't do it myself. I'm not a mechanical like you. I'd get a huge subwoofer that would take up half the trunk. Like,
yeah.
And that was my stereo. I didn't have a home stereo. I had the boombox thing in the bedroom. But, man, you could get that thing pounding. And it was so much fun. And I did that for every car I had for a while. But then when I was in college, I was at Montgomery Ward one day. And I always was interested in speakers. People had speakers, like I was in a fraternity and stuff. People had those bookshelf speakers, like Boston Acoustics and stuff like that. But I wanted something bigger. And I went to Montgomery Ward's, and there was a clearance on this Sony home theater system. It was like a 5-foot rack with the, you know, the disc changer, not disc like DVD, but the disc changer, the graphic equalizer, all that stuff, and the receiver. And I still got that thing. I called my buddy. And his brother came down in his pickup truck. And this was unboxed. It was a clearance thing. We took the whole thing, set it in the back of the pickup truck. And I sat in the back of the pickup truck holding the whole thing together until we got back where I could use it. And I had that system forever. I mean, I still have the pieces of it are still like in my kid's bedroom. But I was so naive. I wanted it. I wanted that sound like you did. I didn't know. There was no information how to set this stuff up.
No.
So I get this receiver back. I figured how to get that to my TV. But for like the first 2 or 3 years I had this thing, the surround speakers sat on top of the front right and left, the main. I mean, that was it. And I thought it was fantastic. I understood where the center one. I could figure that out. The
other stuff, it's kind of in. It's in the name. The definition's in the name.
There was no magazine. There was no nothing. You had, you know, they gave you the cables that came with it. They were only so long. I didn't know you could get it stored by a speaker wire. I wasn't that. But, you know, then after that, I really did. There was information start to come out. But, DJ, I went the first probably 8-9 years I had a home theater system without a subwoofer.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever go without a sub?
Same thing. I had my NHTs, and I couldn't afford one. I couldn't afford a sub. And back in the, you know, early 90s, when even I could afford to get nicer speakers, subwoofers were crazy money. And especially you'd look at like the Velodynes or the Definitive Technology. I remember looking at their speakers in the magazines and stuff, and they'd have the subs that were in the lower part of the cabinet, right? So like you'd have these huge tower speakers, but then the bottom would like fan out towards the back, and you'd have these huge, like, you know, 12-inch drivers off the side, and you were like, oh, that would be some great bass, but I can't afford that. I can't fit that in my living room. It's like me and my wife was a school teacher. I was working at a factory. I'm like, I didn't have all my money was going out the window for the damn laser discs. So I couldn't afford the subwoofers. And then I got my first subwoofer probably late 90s, probably 97, 98. And I got the NHT one, the NHT 12. I can't remember what the letters are that went with it, but it was the 12-inch one. And it was one of the few subs at the time that it was the amp. NHT at the time was running this amp separate. So it was basically a passive sub, but you bought the amp with it. So your amp went into your rack, or for me, it went into my cabinet that my TV was in and everything. And then I ran that subwoofer. I ran right up until I got my SVSs in probably 3-4 years ago. Well, and big improvement over that.
Well, I'll tell you, for me, I was just naive. I had these big Sony speakers. They had two huge woofers in the bottom of it. I'm like, I can't possibly need anything else. You don't know what you don't know. So right. Finally, I just got I just decided, well, I'm going to buy one and see if it makes a difference. So I went to Best Buy, and I didn't buy a small one. I bought a CHT-12 Valentine subwoofer, which at the time was a beast.
Yeah. It
was pretty cool. I hooked that thing up. That is the biggest improvement I've ever made to my home theater and ever will. It was unbelievable. I didn't know what I didn't know. So when I hooked that thing up, that is when I really got more interested into the sound part of home theater. Because before, we had those TVs, I always got the biggest one I could have. I think for a long time I ran a 27-inch. And then I went up to the 36-inch that weighs 3,000 pounds. But that woofer, that's really what did it for me. That's whenever I was really into it. And, to get a big TV at the time, what I got. But part of the reason that my dad is like a consumer. He doesn't want to set anything up. But I always called him the king of multimedia, because whatever was out, he would get. He was the first person in our area to have the cell phone that wasn't the size of a football.
Right.
The smaller one. And that's basically when we started cell phone service in the small part we had. But even back when I was in 7th, 8th grade, my dad always had the 65-inch Mitsubishi that was the size of a bank vault. huge. My mom took the last one he had, gutted the inside of it, and uses it for a wardrobe for clothes. This thing was fantastic. The woodwork and stuff. But he was always in that. When satellite radio came out, he was the first one to get it. When, DirecTV came out, because he used to have this satellite that was 16 feet tall in his backyard.
Yeah.
Oh, he had that thing.
I wanted one of those. Yeah.
Every football game, every channel. Before there was DirecTV, you still got every football game. You just had to know where to point this satellite, and it looked like something from the Death Star. And the neighbors hated it, especially this one guy up on the hill despised it. But he didn't care. But he knows nothing about technology. He knows nothing about how anything works. He is just a consumer. Your system you have now, your Kaleidoscape, he would be the perfect person for that.
Yeah.
Because he would want it set up. He would want it this, that, and just work. But he'd want a 3-button remote that just has volume up and down. Anything complex, he can't even handle it. So I was always, exposed to what was possible with the size of the screen. Not that I could afford it, but I was exposed. But it's been a fun journey, but the subwoofer for me was where it really, really got into it.
Yeah. It's amazing what happens when you add the sub in, where you think you're getting good bass. It feels nice. You can hear it. You hear lower end stuff and you're like, oh, why would I need anything else? But then when you add that in, just because of the comparison between the two, the way they work together, your highs feel higher. Your low, and obviously your lows are lower, but it's just like your contrast ratio on your picture, right? It's like the lower you can go, the brighter your brights will seem. You don't even have to raise your brights necessarily if you can get down pretty low. And by the same token, if you can get really bright, then maybe your darks, because your eyes are closing, it's the same idea. But if you shrink that contrast ratio, your picture doesn't look as good. Well, by the same token, your sound is the same way, and you're kind of shrinking your contrast ratio of sound by not having a subwoofer, because you're eliminating pretty much anything, any decent thing under 80, 100 hertz. And yeah. It's like you're missing out on so much more, so you don't have that vast difference between the nice low end and then the highs that are making you look around the room. The high end is what makes things pan and makes things move around the room. And the subwoofer just brings all that together. It gives you uniformity. It just, there's so much it does for your room.
Well, when I had that Valentine, I had it in up until I started listening to your podcast. And it kept cutting out when I would watch the movie Fury. There was a scene in the movie Fury that would do something to that subwoofer and just cut it out. So I think SVS was having their Black Friday sale. And I put it on Twitter, you know, you put it on Twitter, and I asked if I should, if I'd get much benefit upgrading from a Velandine CHD-12 to an SVS PB-2000. And Rob got on there and said, you'll hear things that you never heard before. And that was enough for me. So I spent the $500, whatever, got this thing in the house. It's huge. I didn't do the cardboard box thing. I really didn't care. It fit. I mean, upstairs is mine. My wife doesn't go up there. I mean, she let me cut holes in the ceiling and all this and that. You know, like you've told me before, I have a very good wife that lets me do stuff like
yes,
this.
Yes, same here.
I have a video game system in my living room.
Yeah, I know.
This is like not a female decorative touch by any stretch. But she has her own living room downstairs. It's really nice. And she's got a 65-inch TCL down there. But, I mean, that sub, the CHT-12 had some musical stuff that was really booming, which I like. And the SVS, not so much. But for the things it does for movies and stuff, it's just no comparison.
Yeah. Yeah. No. It's I have the two. I have two of the 2000s, and it just, what a difference. I mean, it was, I was running. It was so funny because I was running, like I said, my NHT. And then I had this other one that, my dad works for a company doing multi-fasteners. They sell like nuts and bolts and stuff all over the country. And years ago, this company was going out of business on the West Coast. He's like, some speaker company. He's like, is there anything you want? They're giving crap away for really, really cheap. So for like $100, I got this subwoofer, but I'm like, there's no specs on it, no nothing. But I'm like, all right, just another subwoofer. So I'm running that in the room, and it improved it. For my son sitting next to me and stuff. And we got a nicer response out of the room, but it still wasn't what I got when you get the two SVS. Now you bring in these two behemoths, you turn it on and you're just like, holy crap. You know, it's like, I had a Frankenstein subsystem. Now I got two SVS PB 2000s, which like you said, I'm like, I didn't do the box thing. I don't care. I'm fitting these things. I just measured. Yeah, they'll fit. It's good. Holy great. Oh my God. And you never look back. It literally is almost like you plug these things in, and once you tune it up, you run your room EQ and you're done. It's, you know, and you're like, all right, now I don't have to worry about that. The worst thing for me is every now and then, I have them on a Y splitter. And one of them will pop out in the back. It just falls out over time, right? So I have to go in there, make sure they're checked. I was thought of running tape on it and just to make sure it doesn't come off. But I'm like, it'll pop out. And I'll be watching something and I'll be like, this doesn't feel right. A movie that I would.
Vibration or something or what?
What's
that? You don't get as much vibration or.
Oh, yeah. I'm literally running on one sub. So, I mean, you're still getting on one PB, you're still getting good bass, but it just doesn't feel the same. It's not as nice because it's also calibrated for running too, right? So it's thinking that one sub because I've got them on a splitter, but then I'll go and I might be watching, say I'm watching stuff off streaming for a couple of days. Like I'll watch my shows and everything and be like, oh, okay. I might have been running one sub the whole time, but you don't really know because maybe it's just the content. But then I'll go and throw something on that I know and be like, where the hell? It happened to me a couple months ago. I went to throw on Lucy or something, and I was like, wait a minute. I'm not remember. This isn't what it felt like. Something's wrong here. And I was like, I remember this shaking my walls on the opening scene. Of course, walk right back. And I was like, how long has that been unplugged? Plugged it in. There go the walls shaking. There's a... You're like, but it takes something that you know that has great bass. Otherwise, I'm still getting good bass, just not the same.
So. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, the thing with my, I kind of have an imposter complex about home theater.
Why?
Because I don't have a dedicated room. I have marginally decent speakers, Polk Monitor 60s that I've had for a long time. But the big thing I don't have is any HDR. And I comment on these things And the reason I don't have HDR is because I have like one of the last 3D TVs that they don't make anymore.
Right.
And it's hard for me.
You love 3D too.
I love it, but not as much as I used to. I want to see what the stuff looks like on an OLED, be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I kind of feel like I have an imposter complex, and then maybe that's why I'm so critical about audio more than video. I know what bad video is. I can tell. And I have a Panasonic UB420, so I get a little bit of tone mapping. But, I don't have the HDR, so it's hard for me to evaluate exactly how good a video transfer is because I can't do it. So that's why I get so upset when these studios come out and they don't upgrade the audio on these 4K releases. It drives me insane. And I pass on buying a lot of them.
Yeah. Some of them, they downgrade. Some of the Disneys.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the Disneys have been... meaning like people have made the argument that the original Iron Man is better than the Atmos version. I don't necessarily subscribe to that, but people are there's versions that are worse. War of the Worlds
came absolutely
out, was they worse. Did. That was brutal. I think like anything else, just it's a mistake. I don't think they mean to do that. I don't think it's sometimes mistakes happen. And then what do? You have to re-release it?
I think it's intentional. I mean, I don't think you can spend that kind of time and money, have the professionals you have doing this stuff and make an error like cutting off bass at 30 hertz. I'm sorry. I mean, yeah. You can fire the guy. I mean, you could hire some college kid that could do better than that. I don't really understand why, other than they're just not wanting to destroy soundbars and equipment, because maybe those frequencies would that frequency in Fury shut off my subwoofer. Whatever it was. Maybe it's hard on some electronics. I don't know, but I would rather have an upgraded where they at least tried than when they repurposed the old soundtrack. I hate that. Fox does it all the time. All the time. Predator movies, Die Hard, all of it. They just put it out there and not upgrade it. And then we're going to get into discussion about this Star Trek. Paramount just released the 4K UHD 1-4 box set of Star Trek. Okay.
Yep.
And they did a new 4K scan. They repurposed the same audio. Less than a year later, they finished the director's cut, which I just watched yesterday, that supposedly has much better 4K UHD and has a new Atmos track. Now, that to me is what I'd call a half-assed effort. That's just something to get the Star Trek out there, just slap it on there and go. They didn't do that to Indiana Jones. Paramount can do good work. And this new director's cut, I mean, my God, the audio is phenomenal. And that just, with that and the Superman movie they redid, how good the audio was on that. Guns of Navarone, that movie's from 1966. The audio on that, I know they can do better. And I hate it when they just repurpose the same audio track. It just drives me nuts.
So who did the studio do both, or did another company do the second one? You know how like Arrow or studio? Like we'll get into now, the Twister.
What happened, Daylight. I read articles about it. They were what Robert Wise had a group of people who helped him with the 2001 director's cut. And they got some things done that they wanted to get done, but it wasn't done to his satisfaction. And basically, he was older, and he told the people who were working with him, no matter what we do, he goes, we have to get a master quality cut, director's cut of Star Trek the Motion Picture. And that means improving the audio, improving the video, going back, and improving the special effects. Not major changes like George Lucas did. And this guy, they kept asking Paramount, we're going to make a new negative. When can we get this done? We're going to make a new negative. When can we get this done? And they went back and got all these elements and stuff like that. And when Paramount Plus came out, Paramount Plus said, absolutely. So Paramount Plus helped finance it. And he says it was just the right time because the technology had gotten down to the point where they could put the master on a computer screen and do everything workflow just from the computer screen,
right.
Everything they want to improve. But DJ, they took that thing, and I mean, they say it was made for a 2022 movie. It's basically a master cut of Star Trek the Motion Picture. But you just wonder, if Paramount was doing both of them, why did they go ahead and release the 1-4 set without the director's cut to begin with and without an Atmos track? Because it was had to already be working on it, and they already knew it was in the works. But, oh, my God, it is so good. I mean, and that's just on streaming. I can't imagine it'll be like on disc, and it's coming out on disc in September.
Yeah. See, here's the thing is people don't like it when I say this. It's money, and they're in the business to make money. And I say this all the time. I agree with it. I'm not mad at them. I love that they do it, because here's the thing. Look at my podcast. Look at all of our podcasts, all these home theater podcasts. There's not a lot of us. There's not a lot of these podcasts, right? That's why I was able to, that's why, like, I come in and it's like people in this hobby are so hungry for more people to talk to, like we started off talking about, because there's not a lot of us. The fact that they put that out in a box set for the Star Trek fans that aren't really into home theater, but I love Star Trek, I'm going to buy the box set. It's people like us that are like, where's the Atmos? Where's this? And just the fact that they go out and do it. Yeah, it costs us more money. And it's like, yes, would we have liked it in the box set? Of course we would have. But, and do we get a little upset that we have to pay again to buy it again? But that's why we're here. That's what we love to do. And it's like, how many times have I bought Terminator 2? And it's, and I don't care if they come out and say, well, they recolored his eyes in this one. Instead of being red, it's going to be a more of a fuchsia. Well, I'm buying it. What's the difference between red and fuchsia? I don't know, but I'm buying it to find out. That's what we do. And people say, well, it's just a money grab. Yeah, they're in the business. This isn't a charity. They're here to make money. And if we're willing to shell out the money, they're going to put it out there for us. It aggravates me more when they don't try to take advantage of us and give us the stuff that we want. We're like, throw it out there. I'll pay for it.
But what I'm saying is I just passed on it altogether because there was no upgraded audio. I mean, I just flat out passed on. I'm glad I did. But I just don't know. I know that they can. I know what's possible. And I wish with major franchises, especially like that, that they would at least do an Indiana Jones effort. You know, Indiana Jones was a nice upgrade. It has nice Atmos. It's not, you know, so much different from the original, but it's a nice upgrade. But I just don't like it when they just don't do anything with the audio. It just drives me nuts. I guess it's a pet peeve of mine. And it just is what it is. I mean, I wait till price comes down. If the price came down and I didn't know that the director's cut was out, I would have bought it eventually.
Right.
$40 or $30 or something like that. But, you know, it's something that I just hate. I don't like it. And I know what's possible because, like, we're going to talk about this too. We talked about what these boutique companies are doing.
Yeah.
That's who I forgive. If the, you know, a boutique company comes out and they don't upgrade the audio, but they take an older movie that didn't have a lot of traction, except, you know, it's a cult classic and redo it in 4K. I'm all for it because I really think that's the future of some of these movies getting distributed at all in a better format are these boutique companies.
Yeah.
Because it's their primary business. They're not making, you know, studio productions or have different avenues of business. They're there to make content. And I love some of that stuff. And then the company in Germany we've talked about, the Turbine, did a unbelievable job with the two movies that I've purchased from them. And you know, you're skeptical. Is it really? It's from Germany. Like, what are their standards? You know, because you see 3D movies that have never been in 3D from different countries that aren't. They're just like somebody on their computer. And I've never bought one, but I mean, you just wonder. You know, I'm not familiar with the German market, how loose they are with what they call Atmos. But they did a really good job, an excellent job. Now, and I don't know that, you know, Universal cares that much about Twister. I'm not saying that they don't, but they haven't upgraded that for what? I mean, they did a couple of different ones on DVD. It was their first DVD.
Yeah.
And then they did the Blu-rays 10 years old, at least.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. And that's the article that you sent. I talked about it a few weeks ago, and the article about how Turbine did it and how they broke it down. They talked to the studio. Didn't they talk to the sound engineers too and got like the
approval? They tried to get the original people. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're trying to do it at the, you know, to the studio's liking, which I really liked seeing that, because one of the things that worries me is some of these ones that are coming out from, and I'm not accusing any of them, but like you said, these boutique companies, it's not the studio putting them out. So that's why, like on Kaleidoscape, for instance, none of those movies are on Kaleidoscape. Like if a boutique company puts out something in 4K with Dolby Atmos, well, that's proprietary to them, right? Kaleidoscape only gets the stuff that comes directly from the studio. So that's why, like, and you need to have both. If you want to have all the options, you need to have a disc player. I would never get rid of everything and just go all Kaleidoscape. But if I were to, I know I would have the most consistent of all of them, right? But I want to see, like, I've ordered the Twister and the Daylight. You and I have been talking about Daylight for a couple of years in Atmos, because that movie is like, I remember when Atmos first came out and I was like, Daylight is the movie I want to see in Atmos, because that tunnel effect and the echoes that you get. And I don't know if you heard my Die Hard with a Vengeance podcast, but that echo was, I mean, I got chills the first time I heard it just this past week doing the research. And when he's leaning on that pipe and he goes, and then they hear the, and you're like, oh my God. And the way it's placed in the room, that's what I'm picturing, because he's in a tunnel, right? That's what I'm picturing for Daylight. That's what I want. I can't wait to hear. And from your reviews of it, it's amazing.
Whatever you're picturing for Daylight, amp it up by about 10.
Yeah,
it will. I mean, I didn't listen to it anywhere near reference level. I have an open living room on one side, like the back part, like where my couch is open to the downstairs. So I don't listen to it. But I'm telling you, you could feel every blast in that movie. It was unbelievable. Oh. The power they put in that thing, the low end, I don't know what hertz that goes down to, but I bet it's the single digits. You'll be blown away by that. That is no joke. You could seriously just run yourself out of the room if you try to listen to that at reference level.
It's fairly cheap too. The discs,
it's not bad for two discs. Now,
I just ordered mine last night. I haven't actually looked at like the American side of the receipt.
Because it's like $65.
Is it $65 for the two of them? Okay.
Yeah. It's like, it has like 20 pounds or something like that. But then when you order two of them, it dropped the price to 18.9 pounds or something. So with shipping, it was like $65, which isn't bad.
No.
I mean, it really quality. Now, Twister, we can get into discussion about that. Watched it, the Turbine. Then I watched the Blu-ray, about five scenes. And I went back and found my old DVD that had a DTS codec on it, as well as a Dolby Digital. And I'll tell you, the Blu-ray sucks compared to either one of them. It's not even as good as the DTS one. It's not nearly as deep or anything else. The DTS track from the DVD holds up. It does. It holds up better than the Blu-ray track. It'll be true.
Yeah.
That's... But the new one just separates all the sounds. There's so much detail. But there's not a lot of low end. It must be the content. They just did not put a lot of low end like a modern movie would in it. So you're not going to get a lot of that out of your software that you think would shake your room. But it's a quality production.
Yeah. What's interesting is I did the... I didn't go back to the Blu-ray. I mean, to the DVD. I did the Blu-ray to the Kaleidoscape. And what I found was the Kaleidoscape sounded a little bit deeper because mm-hmm. like take for instance that opening scene when the wind, you know, I mean, you've just got the hurricane, yeah, the tornado coming over the storm shelter, and in on the Kaleidoscape I felt my seat rumbling to the almost to this, it felt like, and it's gonna sound silly, but almost to like to the same frequency that the door was rumbling that he's trying to hold closed. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? The well, that's the way my seat was going. But when I went to the Blu-ray, all at reference level, that wasn't there. And I always surmise that to mean like, do you get a lot of bass out of wind? And I was wondering if it was an artistic choice of meaning like, think about when you're out in on a really windy day and you're like, it doesn't thump you in the chest. It's just something blowing by you. So I was like, are they doing that? Is that why you don't get the lower end? I don't know if it was an artistic choice on the sound design or whatever, because it's not explosions, right? Well, there are explosions, but
thunder, and some of the thunder doesn't even that much. But I think it just was never there. It's never going to be there unless they went back and redid it like they did with Star Trek The Motion Picture, because they added a ton of bass to that wasn't there before. But I think maybe there was so much detail that would have been masked maybe by a lower frequency back then that would have masked some of the different things you hear, and they didn't want to do that. But it just does not have it. It just does not have it. Now, the DTS track even had a little bit deeper bass than the new Atmos track. I mean, but not by a mile or anything like that. But when I read online, it said that on the Blu-ray disc, that is a Dolby True track, but they did it at a very low bit rate for a Dolby True track. So that may have something to do with it too, how much data they offer the track.
Yeah, that's I'm learning a lot about bit rates and all that, which I never really pay attention to. I don't get into the nitty gritty.
I don't think
it
makes as much difference as what it is. I think it's mostly that you can either mix things well that will sound good in DTS or Dolby Digital or whatever, and it may sound better with a higher bit rate. But if you have a thin soundtrack, you have a thin soundtrack. I mean, it's just not much you can do with it. But neither one of these sound like an upmixed soundtrack. Or an upmixed soundtrack, what I mean is you have that older movie sound to it. You take the Star Trek, you take Twister, you take Daylight. When you upmix an older soundtrack, you still get a little bit of that older soundtrack feel, maybe a little front heavy, stuff like that. But these three that I'm talking about, they sound like a modern, cleaned up soundtrack.
Yeah.
Which your upmixer can do amazing stuff. The right content. You can put sounds. There's a scene in the new Star Trek where it's when they go through the wormhole. Sounds really good upmixed. Then there's sounds there that make sense, like that really makes sense. When they did the Atmos mix, it sounds great, but it's totally different experience. It's not as obtrusive up top. There's a little bit less. But, you know, your upmixer can do great, great things, but you can upmix the old Lethal Weapon movie. It sounds terrible. Why? Because the soundtrack, frankly, is awful.
Right.
It is. It's just a thin soundtrack, not a lot of bass, not a lot of surround at all. And it's a great movie, and I hope that they redo that like they do. Like, if they do Lethal Weapon 4K set and don't redo the audio, you'll see the most disappointed guy in West Virginia right here. I'm telling you, it would just be heartbreaking for me. That needs updated so bad.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, have you watched it on Blu-ray, the Lethal Weapon movies?
Oh, yeah. That was one of my first Decembers. I watched Lethal Weapon for Christmas because I love that as a Christmas time movie because, you know, that it is Christmas time there. But yeah, it's what's funny is when it came out, they're fine. It's that we're getting so much more improvement out of every movie. And when you go back, you're like, oh my God, this is bad. And it's like in last week's podcast, when I was talking with Reggie, and it's like, you don't know, like you said earlier, you don't know what you don't know. But when we get better quality, all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, this is so bad. But we thought that was great back in the day, you know? And now it's like, I want this to be equal to what we have today. And like you said, well, with these updated soundtracks.
Or when you're first getting into this, it probably sounded fantastic. And yeah. when you have your freaking surround speakers on top of your mains, it was probably phenomenal.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's the thing. It's like, so getting back to your statement that you feel like, what'd you say? A fraud, a pose. What did you say?
Oh, imposter complex.
Imposter complex. Mm-hmm. But you're not though, because you're not like as a home theater fan, you're not defined by your home theater, right? That's like saying you're a baseball fan, but you don't play in the major leagues. Mm-hmm. Well, you still love the sport.
Well, right? I know that, like, and part of the 3D excuse is getting a little thin because there's not a lot of new content. And really, I talk about bad, you know, repurposing audio. There's so much bad 3D out there, DJ. Mm. There were so many discs put out that are just nothing. They're either too dark or just flat or whatever. But when you find those ones that really work, I mean, you really, really love them. And it's like, but I know when I get that OLED or whatever TV I get, I'm going to have like a whole new reason to watch a lot of movies again.
Oh, yeah.
So like, I'm not in a rush to get it. I'm a patient guy. I'm a cheap guy. I mean, I don't. Really, $500 is about the limit that I want to spend on anything. All these new receivers coming out. I got my Onkyo 787 on sale at Best Buy about 4 or 5 years ago for $450. A new one comparable to it's $1,000. I pray that none of my stuff breaks because it hasn't really even improved that much. I have no need to upgrade my receiver. I mean, you used to have, and this was part of, like, I used to be able to justify upgrading. Like, we went from regular DVD, and then we got the progressive DVD.
Yeah, yeah.
And then after that, we had to have that, and then we got Blu-ray, and then we got 4K. So I was constantly upgrading stuff. But at the same time, you had to upgrade your receiver because your receiver couldn't always do all that. But then you had Dolby Digital. Then you had Dolby True. That was a reason to upgrade stuff. And then you had Atmos, and I waited a little bit of time to upgrade to Atmos. But when do you see you upgrading stuff again, other than just to improve on what you already have? The one we have a technological reason to upgrade.
Yeah, I like my receiver. This is the second Atmos receiver I had. I don't know if I would have upgraded. I had an Onkyo, but it didn't have DTS:X, so I knew I wanted that. And then. Like I said on the podcast before, I had a guy come out to the house. Obviously this is before I had a podcast, and I was like, I literally had him come out. He said he did free estimates and stuff. And I was looking at maybe upgrading speakers and everything. And I was excited because somebody was going to come to my house and talk home theater. So we hung out for like an hour and a half. He walked through my room. He demoed some stuff, and he's like, you don't need new speakers. You need a new receiver. And he's like, and he pointed me to the exact Denon that I have now. And I was like, I have no reason to upgrade from here. Not in this room. Somebody asked me recently, cause I have an Emotiva 5-channel amp. They're like, you don't want more power? I'm like, I'm already at reference level blowing up the house. Like it's not going to change anything. Right. And that's what I was running at the time because the Onkyo I had was literally the first Onkyo that came out with Dolby Atmos, but it only did, I think it did 7 channels. And if you wanted to do overheads, you had to upmix, you had to have an amplifier. So I bought a 5-channel amp, ran that, and then sent everything else up with the receiver. And, but yeah, I that guy was great. He, you know, completely honest to me and telling me, like, he could have sold me speakers telling me that I'm going to upgrade my system and I would have bought it. Like literally and figuratively, I would have been like, all right, that sounds great. Let's do this. And he's like, you'll see a huge improvement in your room. Just cause at the time my Onkyo didn't have an Odyssey EQ, multi EQ. So he's like, that's going to be a big difference for you. And, but yeah, right now I don't need, HDMI 2.1 because I'm running a projector. So, and it really not playing video games, but my son plays video games in there, but I don't really care about that. So I'm just, you know, that's
See, it. That's what you're not an imposter because you talk about these things And then you talk yourself into spending the money to buy these things. I can talk about Kaleidoscape, but I'm blue in the face. I'm not buying it. I mean, I think it's well worth it. I think it's great. I'm always conservative, and I don't want a proprietary system.
Right.
And then what am I going to do if they change their change their security or sell to somebody like Logitech did? Because let's say, you know, Apple comes and buys Kaleidoscape, and they just incorporate that technology into their, you know, Apple iTunes or whatever.
Right.
You know, and then you've spent this money. So I'm a little leery about proprietary things. I mean, that's just the way I am. I don't know if that was a thought of yours or not.
Not really. I am weary of that stuff. But here's the thing. And right now, Carl, one of my listeners, he's like yelling. He's like, you go at him, John, you tell him, because he's a huge Apple guy and he's waiting for Apple to take over what Kaleidoscape is doing. And Kaleidoscape's been around for 20 years and they've been sued by the studios. They've been, because if you remember, Napster. Everybody remembers that.
Yeah,
so basically Kaleidoscape went through the same process that Napster went through, right? And then what happened after Napster? What was the big music thing that happened shortly after Napster lost their, like, they lost in court? Because you're not allowed to just say, hey, John, I've got the movie here. You want to download my version? You can't do that, right? So what came out shortly after Napster? iTunes. And that's what, and now all of those music studios are working with iTunes. So what we're getting is, It's becoming a proprietary thing, but, and you're right, Apple could just flat out buy Kaleidoscape. But the infrastructure that's involved with Kaleidoscape, it's not, you can't have just that little box at the top, right? Like you have on Apple TV, that. Right?
I understand.
I got a lot of comments, a lot of questions. I got to do another video on the Kaleidoscape because there's so much to it. And people are like, well, why can't I stream it? Well, because it's not a stream, it's a download, and the bit rates are just huge. That's the, you're paying for that quality, right? The idea, like, now this happened to me. If I was downloading a movie right now, me and my buddy John and my other podcast went to record the other night, and before we got on, I clicked to download a movie from Kaleidoscape. To do it in 10 minutes, you need to have a 1 gig connection, right? It literally utilizes almost the entire gig. Because John, I'm looking, we're on the same app right here. He was all pixelated and everything. I hit pause on my, I'm sitting right here on my phone. I can go on my Kaleidoscape and go pause. I paused the download. He cleared right up. People in the house were trying to watch TV. Everything was, because you're sucking out all of that bandwidth. Plus this was in the middle of the day, not middle of the day, but it was at night when everybody's home. So your bandwidth is lower anyways. You are downloading so much information. For Apple to do that on their, with their servers, I mean, they could buy Kaleidoscape and run Kaleidoscape, but I don't think it would go anywhere. It would just be under now Apple's umbrella. It would still be Kaleidoscape. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I'm not worried about it going anywhere.
Yeah. It's just, you know, with what happened with Harmony, for example, they sold to Logitech, and then there weren't enough people to buy the remotes. And right. Logitech makes, like, I'm on Logitech speakers right now, you know, for my computer. They make a lot of different things. It wasn't their primary business.
Right.
And so they said, the heck with it. We're just going to do away with it. So when that happened, I went out and bought 3 extra Harmony remotes. So
yep.
It wasn't the expensive one. It was like the $55 one you could get at Best Buy. But, oh, my God, I couldn't imagine living without that thing. Yeah. And I'm sure you're the same way with your Kaleidoscape. You know, it's just the way things move anymore. There's life cycles for businesses. And what life cycles Kaleidoscape in? I don't know. But for now, you have the absolute best quality that you can get. And I believe you own the files. You store them.
Yeah.
And we'll probably always have a way to play them back, even if there was no Kaleidoscape.
That's another one that people have a misconception with. Kaleidoscape, if one of the reasons you want hard drives is because, and they are expensive because it's proprietary to them. You have to use their hard drives. You can't build a system like I did with my Zapedi. But here's the thing. I could cut the line to the house and run off a generator. Every movie I have on my Kaleidoscape, I can still play it. So you own it just like you own the physical disc, as long as you have that hard drive. Once that hard drive fails, now you're kind of screwed, right? But that's just like if you lost your disc, you lost your disc. So
can you upload those to the cloud? I mean, do they, can you, like, I back up my data at work, everything, and I have unlimited storage.
Right.
Did you back up your driver to the cloud?
Well,
so you would back up?
If we're talking about, if Kaleidoscape went under, which is like, you could not, because unless they set up a system, say they were to go out of business and they'd be like, all right, we're going to set up a cloud similar to what's going on with Logitech right now. Right. So all our Harmony remotes are still working because they're still, they're still honoring that system. Well, with a Kaleidoscape, if everything, like if they went under, there's no cloud to go to. Like right now, if I delete a movie off of my hard drive, say to save space, then I can re-download it for free because I've already purchased it, but I own it in them, their quote unquote cloud.
Okay.
They are the cloud. So in a way, the answer to your question is yes, I can do it now, but in the doomsday scenario of company went under, I, unless they set up a cloud, there would be no way to do that. You see what I mean? So
yeah, I didn't know if you were saving them on a different hard drive or is it a proprietary one, the Kaleidoscape. You can't set up another.
No, there's no way to get anything off of that. And that's why the studios are working with them. That's one of the reasons they're getting the best quality.
The security of it.
The security. They know when they sell this to the studio is like, is, or the studio sells it to them. They're secure in that I can't take it, back it to a cloud, and then have you back up on your cloud. And then it's a more secure way to have that movie. Right.
Yeah.
So it's,
I love your Kaleidoscape. I mean, I'd have one if it was like something that, it wouldn't be such an investment, but like I said, once I get past that $500 mark, I'll
kind of and Kaleidoscape's a little past that. It's and you know
that's
what?
About what I spent on my upgrades.
I talked to my buddy John, and I love it, but it isn't for everybody. I know that, and it's like I'm never trying to talk any of my stuff. I'm never trying to talk people into something. I just talk about what I love.
Sure.
And then it's like, I'm not a salesman. I'm not trying to sell stuff. I just want to talk about the things that I love. And I love movies. The reason I love the Kaleidoscape going way back to the beginning is I loved the idea of being able to pop in and out of a movie. And this is, I have it with the Zapiti, but this is so much more slick. It's so much easier, so much more reliable. So, and I know I have, and I use the term, I have access to the best possible quality. Doesn't mean every movie they have is the best possible version, because there are better versions elsewhere on certain titles. But if you want to have access to the best possible version and you don't own a Kaleidoscape, now talking about content, and you don't have a Kaleidoscape, you're probably you are definitely missing out on some of the best possible content, because there is no other place to get certain titles. And there's a lot of them, like Disney's, for instance, like Marvel.
Whenever you first had the Kaleidoscape interview, maybe last year.
Oh, with Brett?
I asked about if you bought a used Kaleidoscape, because you can buy used equipment on eBay for like $300. Would you have access to the Kaleidoscape library? Or is it only for new equipment? Because I was like, if there are things on there that I would want, I'd be willing to buy the older version of it for, you know, a few hundred dollars. But does that give you access to it? I don't know. But, you know, that I thought maybe it would be worth it just as an entry point into being able to access some of their content. But I don't know if that's possible or
not. Yeah, I don't know if some of like the older stuff will run. I mean, maybe I could ask. I mean, I can ask Brett. Brett would definitely know. He doesn't work there anymore directly. No. But I could definitely look into that. I know. I talked to the Natural Sound, who's one of the largest Kaleidoscape distributors. They've sold the most, and the owner of that has, I think, the second largest Kaleidoscape system in the country. The owner of Natural, he has like
some, gorgeous.
That's what I said. But I was talking to the owner of Natural Sound, and he was talking about, like, you can buy older hard drives that'll do this, and then it helps you buy your movies. The Alto system, which is an older Blu-ray player that helps you purchase movies at cheaper prices. Their older systems can be integrated, but I don't know with the way things run now, I don't know if the older systems, I mean, you might be, you know, hours to download a single movie on an older system, because they weren't meant for 4K. They weren't meant for Atmos. They weren't meant for all the things these movies have now. Mm-hmm. So,
well, you know, it's a great time in home theater. And I told you this, we're a great time whenever I can have my system, you know, which I have a UB420, I have an SVS PB2000, I have speakers in my ceiling, you have your dedicated room, you have your Lumigen, and we can have a discussion and somewhat talk about the same thing. It's not like, you know, your system is your system and my system's my system, but we can both talk about home theater and not feel like we're on different planets. Like, I don't understand what you're talking about. So I that's why I really don't understand why there's not more people interested in it. I don't know what percentage of people even have anything other than TV speakers or a soundbar. It's probably maybe 4-3% of the country.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, it's not as much as what you think it is to have a system that you can enjoy every day. And part of the reason I have a basement that I could make into a somewhat of a dedicated theater. Now, the ceiling height's not perfect or anything like that. But over time, as I get older, as I come home from work, it's so easy for me to just pop upstairs in that living room. And I use it every day and watch almost all my content on it. And I know Tom on AV Rant, he talks about how his only TV in his house is his
dedicated room. Yeah.
That's it. And it's the same for me. I'm watching everything on my best system. If I had a system in my basement, am I really going to want to go down there? Am I really going to do this? Or is it just easier for me because I have all my media up there on shelves and stuff like that, just to keep it the way it is? Now, if I ever build a new house, I'll definitely have one. But for now, I mean, I'm very content with what I have. And I'm sure that you are content, but you seem to, you know, I say I'm the imposter complex because I talk about this stuff. You know, I can talk about, I can understand the benefits of the Lumigen. I can understand that. But I'm not going to go out and do all those upgrades because I don't think that for me, it would make that much of a difference. Is the Lumigen going to do much for my 65-inch TV from 2015?
No.
You know, and you are in a completely different league as far as that goes. Now, there's people above you and there's people below you. But the fact that we can all talk about this stuff, and it's, you know, like I told you before, we can talk about a lot of subjects become controversial right away. But we can talk about home theater and have different points of view of where we should do this and that, and people just agree to, you know, get along. I mean, there's no controversy.
Right. It's not even a disagreement because I would like you by the end of this podcast to stop thinking of yourself as an imposter, because here's why. I'll give you who the imposter is. And when I had Brent Butterworth on, he described the imposter. Remember when I asked him, I'm sure you heard the interview. Remember, I don't know if it was the first or second time he was on, but I asked him, is it hard for you to come back to your home theater after having been in all of those home theaters? Now, he's been in some spectacular home theaters, and so have I. But he's been in some, like, movie stars home theaters, and, like, when he was writing for a home theater. And he's like, no. He goes, because some of those theaters, and a lot of them, actually, I think he said, they're not even as good as what we have, because they're more about just, like, it's got, you know, seating for 12, and it's more about the, hey, I just want to show this off. Those people are the imposters, because they have the money to not even care about it. They, like I said, I think last week or the week before, they might have a bowling alley on the other side of their house. Right. And it's just because they think it's cool. You're not an imposter, because what makes you a home theater fan and not an imposter is your passion. It's not your theater. Right. Because think about how much you love this way back to when your surround sounds were on top in the front. You still loved it. it was wrong, but it wasn't a home. It was a home theater, but it's like, and like, look at your home theater, just because like you have a living room theater. And I've said this even early on in the podcast, I'm like, I don't care if you have a sound bar, as long as you just care as much as we do about hearing the noises. And I have listeners that have written me and said, I don't have anything. I have a sound bar and that's it, but I just love to hear what I can get someday. That guy's not an imposter.
No, and I'm not saying I'm an imposter either, but I just,
good, because I've already won.
Because the video side of it, I really can't comment on as much. And that's half of it. You know, yeah. I can comment on the audio stuff. My 4K TV is not the best 4K TV. It has no HDR. It still has 3D, which was why I have it. But I know that I'm going to get an upgrade down the line, because eventually I'm going to have to replace that TV. And I'll probably take it. I do have a 5.1 system down to my basement, a second one that I don't use much. But I'll take my 3D TV and put it down there, because frankly, most of the 3D movies come with only 5.1 soundtracks. So I'm really not missing anything on the audio side. But, you know, it's just the imposter thing was just, it's so much of it's video. And we talk about video, especially like with, you know, the new 2.1 and things like that. But I still don't miss that, because most of the movies don't use that technology.
Right.
And the gaming industry is massive. It's bigger than movies and sports put together in North America. It's massive. The only thing bigger than the gaming industry is, surprisingly, the cable television networks. And you know why that is?
No.
It's because of the advertising dollars. The money that they spend for advertising is still in that ecosystem.
I can't believe that, though. I can't believe it. It's crazy, because I don't think a lot of people are watching it.
Yeah, it's still huge because it's supplemented by those ad dollars. Now, those ad dollars eventually are going to go somewhere. And I think that the only upgrades we're going to get for the near future are video upgrades for gaming. Mm. And that doesn't mean a heck of a lot to people in home theater. You know, you have a movie every now and again that comes out of the high frame rate. What, we have two or three of them?
Yeah, they're both I think the two we know of are the same director.
It doesn't even need what that video game system does. But like, my kid is really into video games. I have one kid has like every console going back 20 years. He's just into it. And I was into it a little bit, but I took all my stuff and I like tossed it in the trash. All my Sega CD, all those games. I got rid of it. I was like, my kids aren't going to want this. Well, I was wrong. And I kicked myself in the butt a lot of times, because he's repurchasing a lot of the same things I have. But for Christmas, he wanted a TV that was, you know, 2.1, variable refresh rate and all that stuff. So we got
How old is he?
He just turned 18.
Oh, okay. That's good, though. That's good. He's got the same bug as you. He knows
the game. Yep. Movies so much. And my younger kid, he is into gaming. So he wanted a gaming computer, gaming PC. Mm-hmm. So we got on there and we spent a good bit of money and got a gaming PC. He took the TV out of his room, has two monitors on his desk.
Nice.
And then he decided he wanted the TV back. So now the TV's up on the wall and his room looks like crap all the time anyway. But he's got his gaming monitors, and he's not into gaming like as much as my older kid. But he wants, which my other kid isn't interested at all in PC gaming. He likes all these old consoles. He's got all these old consoles going back to Atari.
It sounds like your kids are a mix of you, like all of your stuff. And like, I mean, you say like your 18-year-old son, that's just, I mean, he has the knowledge and the wherewithal to be like, I need 2.1. I want to get to this refresh rate. He knows all of that stuff. I think, honestly, if you think of our paths, look at their paths, they're coming right towards home theater. Yeah, because we started with car audio, right? And it's like, I think they're headed there, because eventually you slow down, the video games become, and now I just want to watch movies. And they have a great entrance way. We're like, this is what my dad does.
Well, and you know, I'll tell you the other part of it, though. He wanted the variable refresh rate TV. He also, because he had older systems that didn't look good on high-definition TVs, has always wanted CRTs. So we hauled this 36-inch CRT that my neighbor's getting away at. Up two flights of stairs to take to his room. I mean, it was so freaking heavy. I killed myself. I ended up in a chiropractor for like 6 weeks trying to carry this. It was so heavy. But he wanted it because he says, you know, it does not look as good. Those older systems don't look as good on that. Will we ever come to a point that videotapes come back and people want CRTs again? You know, they come back and vote like vinyl have?
People are dying for pixels. It's like we worked so hard to get to 4K and now 8K, which I think is ridiculous and a waste of money.
Those gamers, some of those people who like those classic games, the Sony monitor is like the holy grail of a gaming monitor.
Give me 250 lines of resolution.
That's what they want.
Interlaced.
And you know, we're talking about my kids. My daughter is extremely intelligent, and she reads a lot of novels and books and stuff like that. When she was growing up, she read like all the Harry Potter, all this and that. And I have to credit her because, like, I have a bias towards movies from the 80s. Mm. Okay, like even in my collection, I don't have a ton of 70s stuff. There's some good 70s stuff, but most of mine is biased from when I grew up. And you know, when I had my kids, I would take them to see all the kids' movies, the Shreks, the Toy Stories, and this and that. I would have never went and watched like Hunger Games or Harry Potter or any of that stuff, you know, or even maybe even Lord of the Rings. But my daughter had read a lot of those books, and you know, I've seen spent so much time with her going to the movies, doing this and that, and you know, it's been great. And you can't, that's where I think that the cinema survives. I went to watch Sonic the Hedgehog yesterday. Like I said, my kid likes video games. He wanted to see the Sonic movie. So I took both my boys and went and watched Sonic the Hedgehog. There were so many young kids in there that had lived through this pandemic. Maybe that was the first movie that a lot of them have ever been to. And it was just my local cinema, and it was just full of kids. And they're young kids. They look like they're 4 or 5. They probably haven't been to too many movies because basically the whole industry has been shut down.
Yeah.
But that family time that you get with your kids is maybe why the cinemas survive, because you can do it at your house. But it still doesn't have that group feel to it. You know, you hear kids commenting, like the first scene, the guy gets knocked on his butt, Jim Carrey's character. Oh, he's dead. He's dead. He's dead. He's not getting back. You know, and it, you just hear little kids coming. You know, he's not dead. It's like 5 minutes in the middle. But don't get not like, that.
Not like Steven Seagal in Executive Decision.
Yeah.
Close the hatch and you're like, bye. He was like the headliner on the poster. And remember seeing that the first time, you're like, oh my God, he's gone.
But I think that's how cinemas survive, is franchises for teens, young adults, this and that, and kids movies, because I don't think you can make the artistic movies anymore and expect much of a box office return.
No,
I don't.
No, because it's too easy to put them out on any of the streaming services where the people, you know, these are artistic movies and you can watch that in your living room on a regular TV without great surround, because it's more about the story, the great acting and everything. Now in a home theater, of course, it's going to be greatly enhanced. But the blockbusters are what I think is what's going to drive you to the theaters. And I agree with you. It's definitely the family movie. The family stuff, I think, is going to drive you. Like you with your daughter, same thing with me. I have a son, I have a daughter, one of each. And growing up, when they were growing up, my daughter was into dance. My son was into hockey. I took my son to all his sports. My wife took my daughter to all of her dances. And believe me, that was an equal chore on both sides. But the only times, much like my father with me, the only times my daughter and I got to spend together were like I'd take her to the movies. Yeah. And what I did was I would actually just show up at her school in the middle of the day and take her to a matinee, take her out of school. She didn't know what was happening. The first time I did it, she was like, what's going on? But then as the year, I did it every year for her all the way through school. And she'd get all of a sudden, it was always a surprise, but we saw like Kung Fu Panda stuff, movies like that. But the Hunger Game movies, I took her to the midnight showings. the Twilight movies, the midnight showings, back when they were the legit midnight showings.
Right.
And they were, whenever I took my kids to a midnight showing, the agreement was they had to get up in the morning and go to school. Well, they were loving it because they were going to school when telling their friends they saw a movie that's not even out yet. It just showed up at, you know what I mean? So she has that. Just on the Kaleidoscape, I bought all the Hunger Game movies. Mm-hmm. Once they were all loaded and now they're all across the screen, took a picture, sent it to my daughter at work. She's a nurse in Boston, took a picture. I go, I got all the movies. Can't wait to watch them with you. And she's all excited. And it's, she wants to have her and her fiance want to have a home theater someday.
That's great.
I was going to have him on the podcast when they were in college because one of the things she loves about him, he's just like me. He's messing around. He built a home theater system for his dorm room. It was like a home theater in a box. And he had this whole design and everything, kind of an engineering mind. He had this whole idea. So it's all being passed down. Your kids have it. My kids have it. COVID was the lull, but I think we're going to start to see a swell at the theaters because the movies are going to start to come out and people are going to get excited again. And we're all going to, you're going to start to see the numbers go back up.
What do you think about the future of the box office? They're like, in the 70s, it was the directors that people wanted to see so-and-so director's movie. Mm-hmm. And in the 80s, the actors were more the franchises. The Stallone was the franchise. The Harrison Ford was, if you'd see all of the new movies with Stallone, all the new movies with Harrison Ford. Then you move forward and the franchises are the franchises. And when they step outside the franchise, what an actor can carry the day? Actor or actress can carry the day anymore. Who's just somebody that can be in an outside movie who everybody's going to want to go see? I don't see that aspect anymore. I just don't see it.
Is it possible that you can't see it because we're in it? Like, so for instance, did we know in the 70s that we were only going to like Francis Ford Coppola? We were only going to, Lucas had just started, but he was just starting, then Spielberg. But we look back at those times and think, see all these movies, they were the great directors. Well, at the time, they weren't yet. Now we look back and look, oh, whoa, look at what we got in the 70s. And then in the 80s, we were like, oh, we loved Stallone. We loved, like, who directed, who directed Stallone? Who directed these? Because, like you said, nobody cared. But I think we're at a time right now that people just want quality content. Because of streaming, it's driving us to the point of, like, we don't care who makes it. But if somebody does make something, like a Roland Emmerich, we know what we're going to get with that. You know, you're going to get action. You're going to get disasters. But then you also have Christopher Nolan. We have. I think we have a.
But like, what actor carries day anymore? There's not one actor that says, like, for example, so-and-so's movie's coming out. Everybody's going to want to see it because he's in it. I just think that the franchises have changed where they're so massive. Like Robert Downey Jr.'s been Iron Man for what? 2 years now?
Yeah.
What property or movie or whatever has he done outside of that or anybody else that has really done? I mean, you have COVID, but what movie's coming out with any of those people that you want to see that's not a franchise? I can't think of anything.
Right. Like, I think a good one would be a good example is like a Chris Evans. Chris Evans was like the hottest thing on the planet, right? But he's not Captain America. You're like, all right, we've seen a couple of movies like that. He's pretty good. No slight against Chris Evans, Boston boy, love him, but you're right. It's the franchise that we're liking. I think we, as consumers, we're getting a little spoiled. Cause there's so much great content that when we see something that's just good, we're like, that stunk. Like I just saw yesterday at the theater, my son and I went and saw, Morbius. It's a fine movie. It's it's not the greatest Marvel movie ever, but there's now, what are we, almost at 30 movies? It can't be, right? Yeah. So, but now just because it's lesser, we're thinking like that stinks. And like, I thought it was pretty, I was entertained the entire time.
I agree with you.
It was actually a little bit like you wanted more. I felt like, yeah, there were some parts where, oh, I could have used a little more information there. But to me, if you're asking for more at the end of a movie, that means that you are engaged enough that you're looking for more. And that's one of the biggest complaints I see. How are you saying that something stinks, but you wanted more of it? I've never gone out to dinner and said, that tastes gross. Bring me more.
Yeah. Well, like, for example, the Mel Gibson is going to direct Lethal Weapon 5. They're strongly talking about that going straight to HBO Max. I think that's a huge mistake. I think if there's anything that's going to bring older people off their couch like me to go watch a movie, it's going to be him, who was so popular when we were younger, and that franchise. Now, 4 may not have been the best, but now you have the Chris Rock thing, and he was in 4. I don't know if he's in 5 or not. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. I would assume that he would be.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if they do that straight to HBO Max and bypass the cinemas, to me, that's a movie that's a franchise that should be in the cinemas.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, but the thing is they're also thinking they have to have something to drive HBO Max. They're all the streaming services are competing with each other. It's like, I mean, Disney is kind of the big dog right now. Even, I would say, even over Netflix, because Netflix, I said this on my other podcast with my buddy John. I'm like, are we starting to see the demise of Netflix? And we don't, like, we're not really sure yet, because Netflix is just throwing money trying to keep up with all of these studios that have streaming services. So Netflix is putting out content that they have to pay for, that we have to pay for. Meaning, so Disney puts something out, and it's already, a lot of times, it's already paid for by being in the theater. It's free content, and then we're paying $7 to watch it again monthly, right? Amazon Prime, they don't care about, like, you get that free just for having Amazon Prime to have your packages delivered. All of their content is paid for our pack by us buying stuff off of their website. You see what I mean?
Well, they all have larger outside businesses.
Exactly.
Paramount is streaming.
Right.
Paramount. All of Amazon.
Right. Paramount Plus. They're putting out some, they're putting out Halo. Great content, but it's all paid. You know, Paramount Plus has other stuff. It's all the proprietary stuff. They have income coming from elsewhere. Netflix, nothing. That's why their price is so high. At what point they keep raising their prices, and people are already, Rob H is one of them, people are already starting to drop off and be like, I'm going to do it monthly. At what point do people just, when people just start falling off that wagon, they're done, because they're going to be in so far in debt.
My wife and my kid do, but there's not, I'm more interested in movies or TV shows about movies or movie characters. They don't have a lot of that. I do like Stranger Things. I watched all that. But outside of a few made for Netflix movies that they do like every now and again, there's not a lot that I would be willing to pay $20 a month for on there to get the 4K, because you don't get that for free. You don't get the Atmos for free, which the other ones basically are part of this.
It all comes with it. Yeah.
They're much cheaper. Yeah, I agree with you, DJ. I know that if I was just paying it for my purposes, I probably would just pick it up when I wanted to watch something and then drop it, because I think it's way overpriced as it is.
Right. Yeah. Isn't Adam Project on there?
So I haven't watched it yet.
I haven't watched that one yet. I'm dying to. I know it's really good. I know the movie's good. I know the home theater experience is good. I think the next thing we'll probably see out of Netflix is, for them to survive, they're going to have to put stuff in the theaters. They're going to have to produce stuff, put it into a Netflix original at the theaters, make a box office splash, get that movie paid for, then you bring it back to Netflix. Because if they keep going with the business model they have, and people and all the other competitors start pulling away some of their, you know, listeners, subscribers, I think we're starting to see the slide.
Did they do The Irishman? Who did that? Was it Netflix? That had to have been out in the cinemas.
I think they did, but
I think they did release it in the cinemas just so they qualified for an Academy Award.
Right, but it was a limited release, and it probably made a few hundred thousand dollars or maybe a million bucks, but not, You know, the same thing happened with, what was the one that went? Coda did the same thing this year. They released that in limited theaters. I think globally they released it limited and it made a few hundred thousand dollars and that's it. So I don't know. It's funny. We say like the theaters are dying, but at the same time, the theaters are what keeping these streaming services not afloat. They're putting them like way over the red where Netflix is in the red because they're not in theaters, which is, I think, something we're all overlooking. And that could be the demise of Netflix, like I said.
Well, I think, you know, theaters, but there's some directors, like my brother has a new movie coming out.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
I was hoping we would bring that up because
he's shooting it in July. It's called Hazard. It's about opioids. And he's filming it in Hazard, Kentucky. And I asked him, I was like, Ed, I was like, because he has a production company that's financing the majority of it. Mm-hmm. So he's not having to pick it up all himself. And I was like, Eddie, if they come to you in one of these streaming services, an Amazon, an Apple, a Netflix, wants to buy that from that production company and just put it on there and bypass cinemas, I go, would you be okay with that? And he said, no, he won it because he is shooting that to be shown in a cinema. You know, he wants it shown in a cinematic atmosphere, right, big screen and all that stuff. So, you know, and he's not a big time director like Nolan or something like that. But right, there's some people that want that and will fight for it.
So that's that's an artist.
Students, that's what they want.
Yeah.
They don't want it. There's nothing against streaming because it is what it is, but he wants the first run to be in his cinema. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, he did Mind 9. That's for the listeners that don't remember. I reviewed it. My wife and I watched it on Netflix and I bought it and it's a great movie. And he did a great job with the sound. I mean, you talk about being in the minds. It was gut wrenching. That movie, he did such a great job with that. The actors did such a great job with that. And it's, where can you find it now? Is it just on Blu-ray?
I believe it's still streaming on some sites, but there's DVDs and Blu-rays that are available as well.
Yeah. I was going to ask you that today. Does he have anything else coming out?
Yeah, he's got a movie called Hazard. I've tried to make him to do a comedy because I'm like, Eddie, really, you're really limited in who's going to go watch movies about some of these subject matters, but that's what he wants to film. That's what his passion is.
That's an artist. That's
make
awesome.
A comedy. Make something that, you know, everybody can and he just won't do it. I'll fire him out an idea or something like that, and he'll say, that's pretty good, and then never goes over. But one day I'll get him to make a comedy, DJ, I promise you.
Yeah. No, but like, so Mind 9 is, that's one where I think you're right. That's kind of a niche situation. Very interesting movie. Puts you in that life. And it was gritty. It was tough. But it was a great movie because it gave you that feel. I think a movie about opioids, I think that might hit more home in a lot of places. I think.
Yes, it will. It definitely will. We've had tons of. You don't call them overdoses because most of them are fentanyl. Mm. And that's, you know, not that they took too much, but they took the wrong, not that I'm for anybody taking anything, but you call them overdoses. But with fentanyl, I mean, you could put fentanyl in Kool-Aid and kill somebody.
Right.
You know, it's just because that's why it's touched so many more families, just because of that aspect of it. You didn't have to be a heavy user of whatever it was. You just have to be a user, period. And it may wipe out six people in an apartment building.
Right. You know, it's terrible. It was more, fentanyl's more of a poison than it is an overdose. You know what I mean? Like, right. It's just, you just take it. It's not, it's an overdose because you shouldn't have taken it at all.
Right. It's called that.
Yeah. Right. But yeah, my that's what my wife does now. She works in a school system as a addictions counselor, works with the Trump, and she, the stuff. Yeah, all of that stuff. It's sad. It's sad. And she's lost a lot of students. And they'll get them through the high school years, But then it's, you know, 18, 19. If they make it to 25, you're like, oh, thank God.
You hope they age out of it. You hope they age out of it.
And they, yeah, a lot of them don't. And it's sad. It's really sad.
But he picks this heavy subject matter. And I even like got a Facebook message the other day from an old Mine 9 thing where the lady said, my husband worked in the mine, you know, for 20 some years, and he just couldn't watch this movie. So he just couldn't watch it. Too many bad memories. And I was like, well, I appreciate him helping to keep the lights on in America and this and that. And then she messaged back and said that whenever in the 70s, there was a mine disaster somewhere and they lost 70 miners. And after a few days, they didn't find them and they just sealed them in the mine. I mean, it's a brutal business, especially the history of it and stuff like that. Not that there's, you know, it hasn't provided a lot of good jobs and electricity for the last 50 years, but there's a dark side to it too. And, you know, and it's, some of that subject matter, I'm sure the same thing with the Zopluids movie. There's going to be a lot of people say, I just can't watch a movie about this. You know, I've lost somebody. You know,
yeah.
I went through it myself. Hopefully, you know, those people do get something out of it. But it's tough. It's
yeah.
Tough subject. But that's why I need to do a comedy.
I know. But that, like I said it before, I'll say it again. He's an artist. That's what artists like. It's like, he's not in it for the money. He's not in it for the, I mean, he needs to make money, but he's doing it because he's passionate about those subjects and he wants his stuff to resonate. He wants it to mean, he'd rather have it resonate with, you know, a smaller amount of people than have a bunch of people just be like, oh, wow, that was great. And then forget about it.
The movies he wants to make. The funny thing about him is, I'm going to talk about him a little bit. When we were there's about a 4-year age difference on us. And he was always into sports, Michael Jordan, baseball, and this and that. And I was always into movies and things like that. Now, I played sports, but I was not a very good athlete. But he was a good athlete. He hit like 550 in baseball and had a baseball scholarship to Mercer in college. And he went through school and didn't give two rat's butts about cinema or movies or even writing at all. And he ended up going to WVU, and I got a degree in advertising. Then he went and got a degree in advertising. And when he's graduating, I don't know if he's looking at a film magazine or what. And all of a sudden, he just says, I want to go to New York and go to film school. And my parents are like, what? I was like,
where did that come from?
Anything like this. And he did. And I went with him and moved him into an apartment in the Greenwich Village that you could touch both sides of the wall with your. I mean, and he's done it, and that he just, it was in his, almost by the time he was 20, all of a sudden this passion just came out of nowhere, because DJ, it was nowhere when he was growing up. Nowhere.
Wow.
And he went to film school in New York, then he went to the Savannah School of Art and Design.
Oh.
And then he's come back and made movies for the last, you know, 10, 15, 20 years in New Martinsville, and, you know, just the surrounding area. But, I mean, it just came out of nowhere. It's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, hey, he's like I said,
my parents were floored when he said that's what he wanted to do. And I was like, is this a joke? He didn't care at all. He could care less about movies. He liked fast cars and sports and girls. And that was basically it.
Wow. Yeah. Something. Was it a girl? Was it? I mean, what?
I have no idea. I can't explain it, but it's there now, because that's what he. When he did Mine 9, he rented a whole freaking warehouse and built the whole set. If you ever get the Blu-ray of it, it shows the sets. And I think there's even some stuff online that shows the sets.
Yeah.
These are massive sets that he built. But, you know, the thing about that is, with a low-budget movie compared to a high-budget movie, the movies that use practical effects, I don't care if they're from the 70s or whatever, 80s, they hold up. The early CGI movies look like garbage anymore. Look at Escape from New York. The original one with all practical effects looks great. Escape from LA, there's parts of it that are just awful.
Yeah. And see, what's funny is that's what I really love about like an artist and stuff. It's like, you can give somebody a ton of money, but you might not get like great art out of it. So even going back to like what we were saying before, like, you know, you think you're an imposter, but then you have that guy with all that money and he just pays somebody to build him a theater. But he just like, hey, look at this great room I have. But he knows nothing about it. Right. you remember Hurricane Heist? Okay. So who I can't remember who the director was of that, but I watched a lot of the extras on that movie, and he was a director that did, he's a big director too. And he did some, let me put it in. He had done big budget movies.
It was the Fast and the Furious guy, wasn't it?
Fast and Furious. Yes, it was. And he, exactly. And what he's used to doing movies where they're like, oh, he, like they just threw money at it because it was a big franchise. And, he wanted two or three cranes to do this particular shot for Hurricane Heist. Right. And then he said, he was like, well, it's not really in the budget. So he just went and asked for more money. And they're like, no. And he's like, well, can I get two cranes? And they're like, no. And he's like, he goes, I was lucky I got a crane to do this shot. And he goes, but when I was on Fast and the Furious, he goes, I would just do whatever. I'd say, I need this. Oh, okay, here. Do you need an extra one? Do you want? And they'd throw money at it. Mm-hmm. But the reason I bring that up is, like you were saying about practical effects and stuff, this is where great art comes from. Because the things that he learned doing Hurricane Heist, he invented ways of doing shots.
Exactly.
Because he was inhibited by, constrained by, you know, budget, he's like, I got to find a more creative way to do it. So well,
I believe Rocky invented the Steadicam, and that was a low budget production. The first Rocky movie, they wanted certain shots, and that was what they did, is they invented the Steadicam that would, you know, they could get those shots. And it's, I agree that when you have a lower budget, you got to get more creative. And a lot of times it ends up better.
Yeah.
Because those expensive CGI movies from the early 2000s are terrible. I mean, they're not horrible movies, but the effects in some of them just do not hold up. Where the practical effects movies that are older do. Look at the Star Wars, whenever George Lucas got the money to go back and add some CGI scenes.
Yeah.
They don't blend at all.
No.
I wish he would go back and do it again. People complain about it. Just go back and do it again where it looks better. I mean, at least if you want him in there, go back because it looks like crap.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's the thing. It's you can... If you get new technology, there's a period of time where you use that technology and we're all like, okay, that's better. Mm-hmm. But what's nice is when now you take that technology, now you push the envelope on that. And that's where you can get some art out of that. But that it takes time. And
it does take time.
You know, I appreciate the practical effects, just like, you know, your son going back and using CRT TV. And it's like, to see a movie like Mind 9 that in this day and age come out, that's all practical effects. That's all like literally, you know, he built the sets. It's insane what he did. And you're like, holy crap. It's a low budget movie, but it nailed it. And it by the end of that movie, you know, you went through something. And that's what a movie's supposed to be about, regardless of, you know, Endgame was the same way. Huge budget at the end of that epic thing, but that was the culmination of all of those movies. You felt at the end of that, boom. Well, the same thing with Mind 9. At the end of that, you are just like, you are wiped. And you're like, that's what art's supposed to do. If it speaks to you, if it makes you upset, if it makes you angry, if it makes you sad, if it makes you happy.
It did something.
Trying to evoke a reaction out of you. So it does it.
What do you think about, I mean, and I emailed you the other day or Twitter, I watched The Wheel of Time on Amazon.
Yeah.
And I compared it to Dune. And I liked The Wheel of Time better. I liked how they took time with the stories and developing the characters. And no, it didn't have, it had a great production value. It didn't have the production value necessarily of Dune, but Dune's a very bland, colorless movie that doesn't have a lot of eye candy in it, in my opinion.
The new Dune?
The new Dune.
Okay.
It's just nothing. I mean, it looks great, the size of it and the scope of it. And but I personally don't see a lot of difference in the production values of the TV side of it now, the Netflix, the Amazon versus the cinema. And I think you can make a good movie about a teen novel like Twilight or The Hunger Games. I think it's really hard to make a good movie about a larger volume book like Wheel of Time or Dune, which I don't read any of them. So I have no bias when it comes to like they did what the author didn't want to do or it was with the book, I could care less. But as far as enjoying it and understanding it, I just think that the TV side of it works better. And I personally would like to see a hybrid where maybe they do the first chapter as a movie, then do the rest as a TV and do the last chapter as a movie.
Yeah.
Because I just think it gives you more time and you don't have to wait 2 years for the rest of the storyline to come out. But what are your thoughts? I've talked too much. But what are your thoughts on it? Do you like a TV show or do you think the movie always works better?
See that, and that's what John and I talk about on chat. We're like, well, because we do a news segment where we talk about things that are coming out, and sometimes comic books will get optioned for a channel, right? Like a Netflix or HBO Max, right? And we always say, we're like, what are you hoping for? And all the time, we're always hoping for the series because you get so much more out of it than you do. I mean, a movie is great as a one-off. And you're like, you have that great experience, you go and you're done. But what ends up happening usually is you're like, oh, I want to see more about that. It's like I said about Morbius, you want a little bit more background here. Well, I think, like you said, the series, that's what that's doing for us. I think Marvel's in the middle of doing that right now, giving us that hybrid, right? Part of the MCU is Disney Plus. So you want to keep up on these movies. And you want to keep up on these shows, you've got to participate in both. If you're missing out on one or the other, then you're going to miss out on some plot lines or you're going to miss out on some fun. And that's what this is all about, right? I would say I prefer a series, but obviously we love both. We have both.
Right, and we do. And we don't want to see any of it go away. But at the same time, there's just some subject matter that's too dense. You know, it's not a script this big. It's a script, like, if you're making a movie about War and Peace, or it's not that right. I've ever read it, but a novel that size. And Dune's a pretty significant, thick book.
Oh, yeah.
I just think it's hard. And who wants to wait 2 years? And
I know.
And I had problems with it anyway. I didn't have as many problems with it. I had a lot of problems with Dune. I loved Blade Runner 2049. Loved it. Was really excited for Dune. I've watched the miniseries of Dune. I've watched the original Dune. And I've watched this Dune. The Baron is horrible in this Dune. I like Stellan Skarsgård. It's nothing against him. But they gave him zero. I mean, nothing. Yeah. He's in like two scenes.
He had a limited role in this version, in this movie. Maybe he gets more.
But he just doesn't have the character of the other one. And they're completely different. The one in the 1985 one was a complete nutcase. The one, I don't know if you've watched the 2000 miniseries of Dune or not.
No, I haven't seen that.
Like the Emperor from Star Wars, just trying to nitpick people into doing what he wants to do. He does his best impersonation of the Emperor. I mean, he's like constantly in somebody's ear to do this. It's very manipulative and smart. But this new guy is just like a sludge of crap.
I liked the first Dune because I like how they're going in at a slower pace than the 84 I think
Dune.
And the problem with the problem with the 84 Dune is they tried to cram everything into one movie,
right? And so, they had interference from the studio,
right? So what I liked about this one is it's going to be more drawn out. We're going to get, it should be three movies. And I love that. I actually really enjoyed it. I hadn't watched the old one because I didn't want to remember anything. Like I didn't read the books or the book. Yeah, I didn't want to get into that. And I just wanted to enjoy this new version. I actually own the old version on 4K. I bought it when it came out, but I haven't watched it because I'm like,
it's good.
I know, but
I mean, the 4K is good.
Did you watch Foundation
on
Apple TV? I love that series.
Yeah.
That to me is like what you're talking about, like what they should have been doing with Dune.
How many pages of that are they planning? I mean, they could go on for that forever.
Yeah. Well, he's I listened to the podcast. If you liked the series, there's a Foundation podcast on iTunes. Mm-hmm. So go and listen to that in the first, at least listen to the first episode, because the director, I forget who the director was, of the series, he has it planned out for 8 seasons.
Yeah.
I think all 8 have been greenlit at this point. He's ready to go. But they, while they were doing it, they were talking to the studio, or like Apple's like, okay, what are we going to do here? How is this? Each episode was planned out, and they're like, okay, well, this is going to come to fruition in season 3. And they're like, oh, okay. And they let him do it. And they, I love that series.
I do too. And I like that they're letting these storylines stretch out. Part of the issue that I had with catch-ups, okay? I've never watched one episode of Game of Thrones. Not one. It's not because I wouldn't like it and would be interested in it, but it was just something that I'd never started watching when it came out. And for me to sit there and catch up on 8 seasons of that is going to be difficult. But I like it that I'm able to keep up with these new series. Because if Foundation came out and I started wanting to watch it in season 8, I don't think I'm going back and watching everything.
I did Game of Thrones. It came out, season 1 came out with Atmos. HBO was releasing the DVD with Atmos. I bought it purely because of that. I wanted to hear I wanted Atmos sound. Right? So I came home, I put it in. I watched it. I watched episode 1 and I was like, oh, wonder if my wife will like this. So I was like, hey, you want to watch episode 1? I got the whole season. She's like, all right. She loved it. Now, if she wants to come downstairs and watch a movie, you know that I'm like, yep, let's go. It's like, so she loved it. I went home, I went back to Best Buy and bought the entire set on Blu-ray. I already had season 1, but I bought it again in the set. I bought the entire, it was cheaper than buying the next 6 at the time. Watched all, it got all caught up before season 8 came out or whatever it was. And then watched season 8 streaming. Then bought the 4K and watched it again in 4K on the disc. And it's fantastic. It's fantastic.
Oh, I'm sure. And I know if I started watching it, I wouldn't be able to stop watching it. And then because I did it with Battlestar Galactica, the sci-fi series.
Yeah.
I never watched it. I heard about it. So I started watching it and I was hooked, and I'm watching it till 2 or 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
Trying to get through this. Then I watched Caprica and all the things that go along with it. Fantastic. One of the best things I've ever watched. That stuff never gets talked about. Battlestar Galactica series was fantastic.
Yeah, John and I watched Battlestar Galactica. I think we're both up to 3 times that series.
Oh, it's good.
That's a great series. The problem with it now...
Cliffhangers and turns in that story are awesome.
Yeah. The problem with it now is the quality isn't up to what all the other streamings are. Now
I have it on Blu-ray, so I bought it on that after I streamed it all.
Yeah,
you know.
I'm watching The Expanse right now. Have you watched that?
I have not watched any of that. No,
that is so good. It's a little slow first and second season, still good. It's only slow by how good it gets late in 2 and into 3. It's really good, really good. Great picture, you know. So picture quality, sound is really good. And then on Amazon, seasons 5 and 6 are on Amazon Prime. They're all on Amazon Prime, but 5 and 6 is when Amazon Prime took over, because it was on Sci-Fi before that. And 5 and 6 are in Dolby Vision and Dolby Atmos. So
now, do you watch Cobra Kai? Have you watched all that?
Yep. Yep.
That's good.
I, like a lot of people, I was late to the party on that.
I was too. I mean, it started out on YouTube.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to pay for YouTube to watch something on my computer.
No. That's how bad YouTube is, that it had to go to Netflix and then the thing exploded. And it was like, it's so good. And now that's one that my wife and I, we binge it when it comes out.
Yeah.
As soon as it drops, we watch all the episodes. It happened to drop the last 2 years on New Year's Day.
Yeah.
So we'd spend that.
Now, do you like it when it drops all at once, or do you like when it comes out in a weekly episode? What's your preference?
I like the weekly version. I just had a buddy. I was messing with him on Twitter last night, And he was like, give it to me all at once. And I was like, yeah. And I sent them back. I'm like, yeah, only a child says I want it now. But I like it weekly or sporadic, you know, paced out, because it gives you opportunities to talk about it. You know?
Yeah.
You'd wish you could get to the next one, but then it's that anticipation that makes it fun.
Like when The Mandalorian came out, my daughter was, you know, at her later end of high school. And so we watched The Mandalorian episode together every week. It's something we did. Where now that she's in college and Boba Fett comes out, you know, we don't get to watch those together. So I kind of like the weekly episode as well. Like Westworld, I've been able to keep up on, you know, because I don't like going back after something's been out for three or four seasons, and because I know I'm going to want to binge watch it. And I really like just digesting it in smaller pieces, like how, what you said. But, you know, it's something that whenever Mandalorian came out, we would get together and watch that. And it made it a lot more fun.
Yeah, my son and I are doing that right now with Halo and with Moon Knight.
I'm watching both of those too.
Yeah, so they'll come out, and I just said to him yesterday, I was like, hey, we have another Halo to watch. And he's like, oh, yeah, all right. So we'll schedule time to watch it before the next one comes out. But I like that. Even like The Expanse that I'm doing right now, it's like I'll watch one a day. I don't sit down and watch like a bunch in a row, because I'll stop and I'll you know, come back the next day, and it's like, all right, because a lot of times I'm watching these first thing in the morning. I like to have a good show that it makes me get out of bed. I'll get up at 6 and run downstairs to my theater and watch a show, an hour long show or something, and then get ready and go to work. And it's when you have that great show, you're laying in bed like, is it time to get up yet? Is it time to get up yet? It's, you know, it's a great way to start your day, and nobody else is using it. So at night it's tough. Yesterday I come home, my son and I went to the movies. I was going to come home and watch a bunch of stuff in my theater, and I'm like, nope, he went down there and he played video games for like 4 hours. I was like, ugh. I said to my wife, I go, my home theater time is going to go through the roof when he moves out someday.
Does he play a lot of games in your home theater? Then it takes it up, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he plays. I mean, it's not bad. It's like, because...
You only have him at home for so long.
Well, yeah. What's nice is, like, we'll all come home from work. And my wife and I will spend time together. And then he goes to bed around 8:30, 9 o'clock, because he's got to be up a little bit earlier. And then I'll come down and I'll spend like an hour or two in my theater at that time. But before that, I spent time with my wife. We would watch a show up. Our shows we watch upstairs. So it works out. But yeah, if he wasn't here, I'd probably just come downstairs and I probably wouldn't see my wife. So it all works out. Or she would have to come down with me.
Yeah.
So, and we do that. But yeah, it's funny you say that, though, because that's a huge hot topic, like all at once or, you know, weekly, and people get so upset. And then other people are like, they'll say, well, if it comes out weekly, I wait and then binge it. And I'm like, right. And you're a blast at the water cooler. Spoilers, spoilers. Don't ruin it for me. I'm like, yeah, that's the cool thing to do, everybody. Stop telling
you
me.
Say before, and I'm the opposite, that you don't read a lot of reviews of 4K or Blu-ray movies before you watch it, because you don't want to color your perspective of it. Yeah. Is that to avoid spoilers, or is that to avoid impressions from the audio and video?
It's to avoid impressions, because I learned a long time ago, obviously before I had a podcast, I used to love reading about, so in Home Theater Magazine, for instance, at the back, they would have basically what I do, and they would break down a couple scenes. They'd tell you about a Blu-ray disc and say the quality, and they, you know, X amount of stars for sound, X amount for picture. If it was a 3D, they'd have for that too. I loved reading that. But in a publication like that, it was always coming out months later. So I'd already seen the movie, and I always like to look for the little bit of blurbs, like things that I heard like in the movie myself. And did they see anything or hear anything that I might have missed? Which is basically what my podcast is. That's what I want to do. Once the internet came about, I started reading about stuff a little bit more instantaneously, like, you know, Blu-ray.com, you'd read their review. And say a movie got a bad review, well, now I'm going into it thinking, oh, this isn't very good. And, oh, I see what they're saying. It's kind of flat. I don't, and it's already in your head, right? And then I was like, well, let me try. I got disappointed in movies that I really wanted to like, right? Well, then when I stopped reading stuff ahead of time, I would go and watch the movie, have my own, and the excitement of the movie can ramp stuff up. Your enthusiasm for a particular scene can ramp stuff up. Obviously, it does for me. So what I found is I would enjoy the movies, and then I would have a legit, I could have a legit disagreement with, say, Blu-ray.com. And one of the ones I have a disagreement with is Spider-Man Far From Home. They didn't give it a very good review on sound. And I was like, I saw that and at the 4K with the Atmos. And I'm like, I thought it was really good. I thought it had great bass. I thought it had, I mean, now it's not Lucy, but it's, I thought it had great bass. But that's it. It's not for spoilers or anything. I just don't want my idea tainted, because I know that, like, in my podcast for you guys, I know that if I tell you I hear a sound someplace, you're going to try to listen for that sound now.
You are the best at understanding the direction of sound. Like, I listen to your podcast, and maybe it's my room, it's not your room, but you talk about the exact right, left, up, down. And I was like, how does he keep track of all this stuff? I mean, I'm sure you make notes, but just sometimes it's just, there's so much going on, but you seem to understand a direction. Maybe it's the art side of you that understands more how you would, like, if you were physically putting it out there. But I listened and I was like, I can't get that. I mean, I get a little bit, not to the level that you did.
It's, I think it is my, it's how my mind works. I'm all about details and little things. And I love the movie Twister, like we were talking earlier, but, and there are details in there, but they're so fast moving, and it's like, yeah. But I love the little things, like that, like I said, the echo in, you know, Die Hard with a Vengeance, little tiny things, and how it's listening to it over and over. Like, I don't know if you saw my tweet this morning, that meme, and it was, I sent it to my buddy, John, let me pull it up. And it was, it's a meme of one of those things where people are like, so there's this pretty woman or whatever. And, anyways, it says films on my watch list. And it's just like great looking blonde. I think it's Britney Spears, as a matter of fact. And then there's the me, and then it says films I've seen God knows how many times. And it's me hugging the movies I've seen a million times when I'm ignoring the beautiful woman in the background.
Yeah.
That meme was made for me, because you know what I mean? Like, and I retweeted it, whoever put that out, I retweeted it saying this was made for me, because somebody will be like, have you seen the Adam Project yet? No, but I watched Star Wars 3 more times this week. Saw Endgame, Born Identity, Die Hard, and watched all these other movies that I've seen a million times. And I'm always looking for new things. I'm always looking for sounds.
Here's the reason I read reviews, and it's not mostly for the new stuff, because usually I've already decided whether I'm buying it or not based on the upgrades that the 4K offers. But I check Blu-ray.com every day. And you can check the Best Buy price. You can check the Amazon price. You can check the Walmart price to get a general feel. And if there's something on there, I always wait for like an older movie, a catalog title. I'll wait for the price to drop. And then if it's a movie like I'm somewhat interested in, I will go read the review to see if it's worth picking up, what their impression is of the audio and video. If they say it's not worth picking up, you know, I probably won't buy it. But if they do, and a lot of times that's where you find some new movies like Daylight and 4K and stuff like that. Not Daylight, all the vampire movie I told you about and stuff.
Twilight? No.
No, the one with shoot. I can't remember the name. I sent it to you. It was really good too. The guy that's in the new show, Moon Knight, the guy that's the villain, he was in.
Daybreakers. Ethan Hawke, the 4K version.
Really good.
Yeah.
And that's one that I was remotely interested in, that I read the review and I ended up buying it. And I really liked it. The bonus content in it was great. But that's what I use the reviews for mostly, is decide on those catalog titles whether they're worth picking up or not.
Yeah. And it's See, that's the thing is I buy so much stuff anyways. I know I'm already going to buy it and I don't mind. Who knows where I'd be if I didn't buy all this crap over the years. And that's why I laugh. Like when you, one of the detractors to the Kaleidoscape, well, you're going to buy everything over again. Yeah. Do you know how many times I've bought my stuff over and over and over again? So that's part of the hobby to me.
Right.
And exactly. I like to buy movies that I know I like, that I knew I was going to like. I just pre-ordered, what's the one with Tom Holland, it hasn't come out on disc yet. Tom Holland and, Mark Wahlberg, I think, are in it. It begins with a CH. I just pre-ordered.
I know what you're talking about. I know.
I just pre-ordered it on Kaleidoscape. I'm like, hey, I know it's going to be Atmos. I've heard that it's a good movie and it's supposed to be great. I'm like, all right, great. I'll buy that one because I'm like, could I wait and just rent it? But I'm like, I know I'm going to want it. I know I'm going to watch it. That's what I do. I just buy them and I would rather buy it and then find out later on my own accord. That's part of my hobby for me is that I want to review this from my own self. It's not about the podcast. I've been doing this for 30 years. Right. I just do it for myself. If I don't like it, I'd be like, I didn't like it. Oh, well,
yeah.
I've spent money on worse things. And
I've spent money. I have so many DVDs. I used to buy like every new release coming out on DVD and I have all these obscure movies on DVD that will never see the light of day on Blu-ray or anything
else. Yeah.
Not horror movies. I'm just saying there were so many movies coming out. There was a lot of direct to DVD and there was a lot of theatrical back then. I bought tons of action movies and stuff like that.
Yeah. You know what I do miss? Honestly, and it is a big thing. It's like the whole idea of like a Blockbuster or going, for me, it was going to Suncoast Video or going to the guy that I used to buy my Laserdisc from, going to the store and actually purchasing my physical media, right? Mm-hmm. And nowadays, even before the Kaleidoscape, it's kind of like that's what you have anyways. You just go on Amazon, you click on it, it gets shipped to you. You don't have that interaction with the disc in the store, looking at it, looking at the box cover, flipping it over, reading about it and being like, oh, this one's Atmos. What does it track? What, how long of a run is this movie? How long is it? Everything's done digitally now on your computer, or your phone, you click on it, it ships to your house and you watch it, Yep. Who was it that I had on? Was it Mike or who was it? One of the reviewers, and he loves putting the disc in. Like the feel, and I love that part. I love like opening the tray, opening and putting the disc in and like, or even back the Laserdisc, putting the Laserdisc in. I love all of that stuff. I love my Laserdiscs still smell like my buddy's place, that Dave's place. And I could still like being in the store. I miss that part. I love tech. I love it all. I love the Kaleidoscape that I'm sitting. I can be anywhere in the world, buy a movie, and it just uploads to my system at my house. That's neat. But I do like that interaction with the people in the store and talking with other, standing there holding a disc and somebody else next to you goes, what's that one? Oh, this is this. And you have a little conversation. So, but now I'm getting it here. So the win. What stores did you go to, any stores to buy movies and stuff? Do you have anything like that?
I live in a small town, like 5,500 people. We had a Walmart. We still have that. Mm. So that's basically there, or a Best Buy or a Circuit City, things of that nature. But yeah, it's like we don't have a lot of options. So Walmart still has some Blu-rays. Our Best Buy is cut back, but hardly any 4Ks at all. Best Buy's cutting almost out of the store. They still have some at the few I go to, but physical media in a brick and mortar store is almost a thing of the past as far as DVDs and Blu-rays and things like that.
Yeah, the places I went were all small little stores. Like even like I said, Suncoast Video was a small store in the mall that sold, VHS, DVDs at the time. They had Laserdiscs too, believe it or not, back in, early on. But it was a smaller place like that. But even Best Buy, That it's not the same. Even when they had a ton, it was just you. It's kind of like going to Amazon, just you were in a physical store. So, but yeah, so.
Yeah, but it used to be back in the day, and I'll just wrap it up here, but you used to have the special edition that was released at the same time as the bare bones one.
Yeah.
You don't have that as much anymore. You do a little bit with some, you know, packaging and stuff like that. But it used to be a significant difference, especially in the bonus features. He had that recently with Ghostbusters. I would always buy the two disc special edition. I would never buy the other one. You used to have the pan and scan thing too.
Yeah.
Big screen. But I mean, you used to have to physically be in the store. You would have bought the wrong thing if you bought it online. You know, you don't know what you don't know.
Oh, exactly.
First is probably what you would have got, unless you knew, because a lot of times it wasn't announced. It was just in the store like that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think they learned too. It's like, hey, why are we putting these both out at the same time? We can double dip on the people that want the special edition later. And they got wise to that, and that we would spend the money. And that's why they pace it out differently. So, hey, I'll take it. The more content, I'll take the better.
Any home theater is better than the home theater.
There you go.
As long as there's physical media, I'm going to be happy, because I don't trust any of these studios. With the political environment we live in, they may just wipe out a whole series or a whole character and just make it available. You don't know.
Oh, yeah. Know? Yeah. I don't even want to go down that road. I didn't even think of that, but you're right. Be like, oh, you know what? Donald Duck's never worn pants. Doesn't exist anymore.
You never know. There's so many crazy things anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh. It's been a lot of fun, DJ. I've had a blast.
Yeah. Awesome. Doesn't it fly by?
I couldn't believe it.
I just looked down. I'm like, man, it's been over 2 hours already.
Yeah. Well, wow. At least I'm in the 2 hour club. I could.
There you go.
Yeah. Well.
I know AB Ran has a 2 hour club for people that listen for 2 hours. I have the 2 hour club for people that have been on for 2 hours.
Yeah.
So be part of the club. That's
well, anybody that's hesitant about coming on, come on. I mean, it was easy. It was fun. And like I said, it's a dialogue you can't have anywhere else, because no one else that I know on this planet is going to sit with me and talk about this for 2 hours.
Well, all the people listening, that's what.
I don't know them, though.
I know. I would love to do a group chat, but when you get too many people on, it's everybody like, oh, that's where, even when we do the six of us, that's tough, because we all want to talk, right? It's tough. But speaking of which, I'm going to announce here, I am taking next week off, and I am going to be no podcast on Friday. There will be a podcast on Tuesday, but no, I won't have a guest. What I'm going to do is I'm going to catch up on all the different comments that I've been keeping all my comments, and I'm just going to record at some point. That'll probably be a 2 hour podcast of me just going through all, because I'm enjoying that. But at the same time, I wanted to, I actually had another thing, a whole video, a podcast I was going to put out yesterday. I was going to play it here, but it's only 7 minutes long, but we just have fun talking, and I don't want to inhibit that. So I think that's kind of how things are going to go now. We just have discussions, and I'm just going to have to find time to put out a podcast about comments and stuff later.
Yeah, so. I even forgot about your comments, and that's rude of me, probably.
No, I haven't done comments in 3 weeks, John.
Okay, I thought you did a few last time.
I've been trying to wedge them in, but it was like the only, I have them ready just in case, like, we're like, oh, anything else to talk about. But everybody's been so, it's just, like you said, it's just easy. We just have a great time talking.
It's a lot of fun. It's dialogue you can't have anywhere else.
That's what I want. So, all right. That's it. Thanks, John. Thank you, everybody, for listening. All the links are in the show notes. Rate, review, subscribe, all the big fun stuff. I don't like talking about that stuff. Just have fun and go push play. Hey, Fred.
This has been a Hey Fred production with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.